Welcome back to the next episode of What's Up, Prof. Good day, Walter.
Hello, my friend. I'm still exhausted from the last one. I thought it was going to be an introduction of about 5 minutes.
Yeah, and well, that's how it goes with when we get together.
Yeah,
we think
it's all your fault, I think.
I'm sorry. I'll take all the blame. Let's open with a word of prayer. Our Heavenly Father, we thank you so much that we can gather and that we can discuss these most important topics. Will you please enlighten our minds, enlighten the viewers' minds, and guide us through this talk. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. We were talking about the Great Reset, and we were introducing it, and we got to corporate identities and real identities and real people and straw people. And we got into all kinds of issues just to show how deceptive everything in the world is and how the economies are run and what the basis of the economies are. Now we have to see what it will be like when the papal agenda becomes the universal agenda. It will be a catastrophe.
Yes. It's like you said in the previous one. So maybe if people didn't quite understand the part one, this will bring it into perspective.
I hope so. Remember we had this quote in the last one, and we're not going to repeat ourselves, but we're just giving an introduction. It was not the purpose of God that poverty should ever leave the world, and we qualified that in the last one. Of course, God doesn't want anyone to be in poverty and to suffer, but he permitted it for the sake of character development while we are on this fallen planet. Mm. The ranks of society were never to be equalized, for the diversity of conditions which characterizes our race is one of the means by which God has designed to prove and develop character. Then she states, many have urged with great enthusiasm that all men should have an equal share in the temporal blessings of God. In other words, that there should be a universal income and everybody should be on the same level. But this was not the purpose of the Creator. Christ has said that we shall have the poor always with us. The poor as well as the rich are the purchase of his blood. And amongst his professed followers, in most cases, the former serve him with singleness of purpose, while the latter are constantly fastening their affections on their earthly treasures, and Christ is forgotten. That doesn't mean, of course, that the higher classes are all selfish, but it is a fact of nature that they often are. The cares of this life and the greed for riches eclipse the glory of the eternal world. And then this interesting sentence. It would be the greatest misfortune that has ever befallen mankind if all were to be placed upon an equality in worldly possessions. In other words, if anyone says there must be one universal income, everybody must be on equality.
Yeah.
That would be the greatest misfortune that has ever befallen mankind.
Great.
Good. That as our introduction. So having established that, let us see what the Pope of Rome has to say. And let's get it out of the horse's mouth, which is the journal America, which is the Jesuit journal, the Jesuit Review. And it states that Pope Francis has endorsed a universal basic income. COVID-19 could make it a reality in Europe. So he is endorsing what the previous statement said would be the greatest misfortune to ever strike humanity. And they write here in this article, in 2017, British Prime Minister Theresa May, faced with demands to increase nurses' stagnant wages, famously denied the existence of any magic money tree. Ms. May's Conservative Party predecessor, Margaret Thatcher, had asserted that the UK government had no money of its own. only what it raised from the populace by taxation or borrowing. In other words, from the straw men, right?
Yes, from now we can go back to what we mentioned in the previous one, that legal fiction.
That legal fiction. Most people probably thought this orthodoxy prudent. A budget deficit was a sign of bad governance strenuously to be avoided. Such apparent and long-championed fiscal frugality by conservatives have often gone unchallenged until now. We're going to change things. As the second COVID-19 wave swept Europe, so too has a burgeoning conversation about universal basic income that may require a reassessment of hoary thinking on deficit spending. In Scotland, as elsewhere in the United Kingdom, the discussion is not new, but it has become more prominent, indeed urgent, as the political and economic response to the pandemic turned fraught. The idea even got an unqualified plug from Pope Francis himself. In the recently published Let Us Dream, the Pope endorsed an unconditional lump sum payment to all citizens, in the context of his regular calls for an economically, environmentally more equitable post-COVID world. Francis' version of UBI suggests that it be paid for through taxation, but there are other ideas about how to fund UBI in circulation. So he wants a universal income.
Yeah, universal basic income.
Universal basic income. Now, this COVID crisis that we've had, we're not talking about the reality or the non-reality of it. Let's just look at the economic implications. And there was an interesting discussion. Tell us about this lady.
Well, her name is Catherine Austin Fitz. She's an economic expert, but her views are often not so popular with the mainstream media, so they tend to censor her a little bit.
Yes, but as we discussed in an earlier one, if there is a conspiracy, one would look at all sides, right?
Correct.
One should have the freedom, at least, to look at all sides.
Yes.
So let's just listen to her view. We're not taking a stand, we're just listening.
So we've had a global reserve currency system, the dollar, and it needs to evolve and change, and it's long in the tooth. There's lots of unhappiness with the system, and the central bankers are trying to bring a new system. And to do it, they're trying to extend the old and accelerate the new, and it makes it a very chaotic thing, since much of the new is being tested and tried and prototyped, and it involves many different industries. So I describe the new system as the end of currencies. So we're not bringing in a new currency. We're essentially bringing in a new transaction system that will be all digital and essentially end currencies as we know them. So what they're trying to do involves essentially all the money on the planet. So it's big, it's complicated, it's messy. And the challenge they have is, how do you market a system that, if people understood it, nobody would want? And of course, the way you do that is with a healthcare crisis.
And why is a healthcare crisis good for that?
Because generally, if a few people want to control the many, the question is, how can you herd all the sheep into the slaughterhouse without them realizing and resisting? So the perfect thing is invisible enemies. So we had the war on terrorism, with invisible terrorists, and then now a virus is perfect because it's invisible. You can't prove that it doesn't exist because it's invisible. So invisible enemies are always the preferred one, particularly if they scare people. If you can use fear and introduce significant fear, then people will need government to protect them from the invisible enemy. Then the second tactic, which is very effective, is divide and conquer. And so in the meantime, if you can use the media plays a very important role. If you can turn men and women against each other and black and white against each other. And one of the reasons you import a lot of immigrants into Europe is turn the general population against the immigrants, and then you need government to be in the middle. And, so these are all Whether it's divide and tactic or invisible enemies, these are all ways to institute fear and get people to go along with things. And of course, the invisible virus allows you to do enormous control mechanisms. You can stop people from gathering, you can stop people from organizing, you can stop people from getting together and talking about what's going on, et cetera, et cetera. And if you digitize it with contract tracing, then you can control who's talking to whom. If you can get them to do all their work and education online, you can literally listen to everything they're saying. So you can institute extraordinary amounts of surveillance, all in the, you know, the theory that we're protecting you from the invisible virus. It's very clever, you know, and as you can see, it's working in with many people, not everybody, but many people. So to me, a lot, and I don't want to underestimate the ability of the leadership to introduce pathogens that will kill people, and I don't want to suggest that people aren't getting sick, but essentially what you're trying to do is you're trying to get people to buy into a solution before they see where it's ultimately going to go, because you're talking about a transaction system that is no longer a currency, it's a control system. So it's like a credit at the company store. If every central bank comes out with a digital central bank currency, they have the ability to turn your money on and off. So if you don't behave, that's it. And of course, as we know, they want to combine this with transhumanism, which means literally, you know, I take injections that can institute the equivalent of an operating system in my body. And so I'm hooked up to the financial system, literally, physically.
To step back to the beginning, what is the actual effect of the lockdown measures?
So what you're doing is you're trying to, I used to call the Patriot Act the Concentration and Control of Cash Flow Act. And this is a very similar process. You're trying to dramatically centralize economic and political control. So let me give you an example. We have 100 small businesses on Main Street in a community. You declare them non-essential, shut them down. Suddenly Amazon and Walmart and the big box stores can come in and take away all the market share. In the meantime, the people on Main Street have to keep paying off their credit cards or their mortgage. So they're in a debt entrapment. And they're desperate to get cash flow to cover basically their debts and their day-to-day expenses. In the meantime, you have the Federal Reserve institute a form of quantitative easing where they're buying corporate bonds, and the guys who are taking up the market share can basically finance at, you know, 0 to 1%, or their banks can at 0 to 1%, when everybody in Main Street is paying 16 to 17% on their credit cards without income. So basically, now you've got them over a barrel and you can take away their market share. And generally, they can't afford to do what they say because they're too busy trying to find money to feed their kids.
That's interesting. She has some speculations, which might or might not be true. That is not for us to debate. But what she is seeing is the outcome, whether planned or unplanned, is not the point now.
No.
But this is
what the outcome is.
What is the outcome? Mm. Now, you know, if you want to think in a conspiratorial fashion, then if we are allowed to speculate a little bit, if we say that these governments are actually all under a central control already and that the ship is being steered in a particular direction, because surely the enemy of souls is not divided upon himself, is he?
No.
So any apparent divisions are actually divisions which are designed to steer people in a particular direction using the Hegelian dialectic, right? So what if you had a system that you wanted to bring down and replace with another system? Then you would create a Hegelian divide, right?
Yes.
So what if you wanted to push something in a particular direction? So let's say you introduce a system or a party form of governance in which you stimulate the economy by making the flow of money to the people very cheap.
Mm.
And thereby you stimulate the economy.
Yes.
You drop the taxes, you drop the interest rates, you ask the Fed to lower the rates. Everything must go down, down, down. Get the money to the people.
Mm.
And then you create a crisis. Purely speculation now, right?
Yeah.
And then you use the crisis in order to create a situation, just as she explained, where the small man cannot repay the loans because he doesn't have any income,
mm-hmm.
and the interest rates are going up, and he has a problem. And everybody loses their basic income and loses their property. Now government can step in and say, we've had a crisis. It wasn't our fault, guys. Something really happened here, and we'll solve this problem by giving you all a basic income.
Yeah.
Wouldn't they sigh a sigh of relief?
Mm-hmm.
But you'd be where you were, right?
Yes.
But you would first have to move the economy in the way where the flow of money was to the very ones that you wanted to pull the rug out from underneath.
Yes.
And then you turn the tables.
Yes.
And then you can go to a great reset. Now, I'm not saying that is what they did, but it is a possibility, right?
Correct.
Now, she was also talking about being, through AI, attached to the very system itself.
Mm.
Now, is that a pure conspiracy?
Well, most people will immediately
shout it conspiracy theory. Right. Now, here it was an article in the Deutsche Wirtschaftsnachrichten, which you translated, and it was from Klaus Schwab, talking about the Great Reset will lead to the fusion of our physical, digital, and biological identity. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah. That's
exactly what she just said.
Exactly. And that's the same thing that most people have always said.
Is a conspiracy.
It's a conspiracy.
But here it comes out of the mouth of the big man himself, mm-hmm. right? So the founder of the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, recently said that the fourth industrial revolution within the framework of the Great Reset will lead to a fusion of our physical, digital, and biological identity. This transhumanist approach of the elites has always been dismissed by the public as a conspiracy theory. And here we are at the very point of these things happening.
Correct.
Now, our last discussion was to vax or not to vax. And some people, of course, believe that the vax could actually contribute to this or some future vax, maybe mm-hmm. not this one. So there's a lot of speculation out there. But there's reason to be distrustful because of these statements.
Yes.
Schwab also openly advocates something that the media still claim is only a field of discussion for conspiracy theorists, namely active implantable microchips that break through the skin barrier of our body. The World Economic Forum explains on its website how thousands of Swedes implanted microchips into their bodies a few years ago. So these are things that are realities, and if you then throw into the mix the religious ideologies yeah. of the chip being the mark of the beast, which it is not, then you have a recipe to get not only the economic world, the individual world, the governments, the religious systems, all of them involved in one big hue and cry.
Yeah.
Thousands of Swedish people are swapping ID cards for microchips. Thousands of Swedes having microchips implanted into their bodies so they don't need to carry key cards, IDs, and even train tickets. Last year, the state-owned SJ Rail Line started scanning the hands of passengers with biometric chips to collect their train fare while on board. So these are realities that are happening. And the devil has managed to link this to another philosophy which has nothing to do with it.
No.
Because his main aim is to make void God's law.
Yes.
He wants to have a legal system,
mm-hmm.
but not a lawful system, right?
Yes.
And the legal system is based on a fraudulent precept.
Correct.
On a straw man that doesn't exist.
Yes.
Or a straw entity that is treated as a person, even though it is a corporation.
Yeah.
Good. We discussed that last time.
What is that word again? A legal fiction.
Exactly. A legal fiction. There was a very interesting lecture by a German journalist. And I think he did an amazing, amazing job. Now, I don't want to repeat his lecture.
No.
But it provided a lot of food for thought.
Yes.
It was very carefully worked out. It was very well documented. Mm. It didn't have any conspiratorial flavor. It was just a number of facts in the right sequence.
Exactly.
And I think it would be appropriate if we looked at this issue from this viewpoint and just get an idea of whether there has been a long time of planning to set the current things in motion. His name was Paul Schreier, and he wrote about pandemic Planspiele, pandemic Planspiele, planned games, the preparation for a new era. So, what does he say? You have translated it here. Politics and the corona crisis did not come out of the blue. The fight against viruses began as early as the 1990s as the fight against bioterror. So there have been a number of movements preparing for what is happening now.
Yes.
Research shows for more than 20 years since then, pandemic scenarios have been rehearsed again and again in business games, first in the United States, later coordinated internationally, also with German participation. And the title of these exercises are reminiscent of Hollywood productions. In other words, what these people would do is they would enact the pandemic. And these were not regular actors.
No.
These were high government officials that were actually involved in government in these types of things.
Right. And current at the time. And
yes.
All sorts of different ones.
So the ones that they were enacting as preparations, the one was titled Dark Winter. And that was in 2001. Then Global Mercury, that was another enacted scenario, 2003. Then the other one was Atlantic Storm in 2005. Clade X in 2018, and that's a very interesting one, which we will look at. High-ranking officials and government representatives, as well as well-known journalists, were involved most recently at Event 201, in October 2019, and it's important that this was before the pandemic, including board members of large global corporations, and after the World Health Organization declared a coronavirus pandemic in 2020, many of the measures that had been tried and discussed for years were implemented globally. That is a fact of history. Passages like this appeared in the script 20 years ago. The sight of an armed military presence in American cities provokes protests against the curtailment of civil liberties. The question is how and to what extent we enforce these things. How much violence do we use to keep people in their homes? In the event of a pandemic, basic civil rights such as the right of assembly or freedom of movement could no longer be taken for granted. Restrictions on freedom, but also mass vaccinations, were a regular part of the simulation games. So this has been practiced over and over again. But not only that, there was certain legislation that needed to be introduced.
Yes.
And this legislation was often in conflict with your basic rights under the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Now we must understand that in the last one, we spoke about the relevance of the Constitution, which basically has been overridden by maritime law.
Yeah.
Because In actual fact, we're running under a legal system.
But not a lawful one.
But not a lawful Correct. System.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Meaning that, if I'm correct, since Lincoln, they walked out of that one, there's been no Congress.
There's been no Congress.
So they could, everything from there on was done under martial law with executive orders.
Exactly. So there is an appearance of government. But you cannot move people from point A to point B with great haste if the differences are too great, right? So you have to do this gradually. So you have to create a crisis in order to introduce legislation that will enable you to do what you finally have to do. So basically what he did is he went through the history of these and showed how legislation was introduced gradually over time. And when there was a bottleneck, then there was a crisis.
Yeah, when there was a resistance,
Then after that, the legislation passed and was introduced. So the content of these exercises was fight against the terror or a political tool since 1919, bioterror simulation games 1999 to 2005, and then they had an operation which was called Lockstep. That means all the nations of the world had to come into harmony and work along the same lines of thinking. So the people that were involved in, let's say, pandemic or health issues in the various countries, they were gathered together and they all partook of these exercises.
Correct.
So this has been planned for a very long time. Then there were the Trump and pandemic exercises from 2017 and the stock market quake in September 2019. So the market is involved.
Mm-hmm.
So if we go through the dates that this man mentioned in his lectures, he said, well, there were various scenarios that happened. In 1990, you had the fall of communism. Now there was no enemy.
Yes.
This is a problem. How do you keep your armies going?
Yeah, how do you justify
how do you justify it?
Mm-hmm.
And so Colin Powell at that stage, who was the highest ranking one in the military, said, I'm running out of demons. I'm running out of villains. I'm down to Fidel Castro and King Tu Song. He said, referring to the leaders of Cuba and North Korea, Powell's comments suggest the Gulf War has not solved the major problem for some Pentagon planners over the past 3 years. How to justify a large army and a nearly $300 billion military budget in the post-Cold War era. Why would you need a big army? Who do you have to control if there is no apparent enemy?
Yes.
So we need enemies. 1993, you had the terrorist attack at the World Trade Center. So now you had an invisible enemy, a terrorist. In July 1994, Clinton published his National Security Strategy of Engagement and Enlargement. March 1995, Joseph Biden, who is now the President of the United States, Chairman of the Judiciary Commission of the Senate, proposed a law to give more power to government and the President in case of a terror attack. And this law was vehemently rejected. And so, in 1995, there was a terror attack in Oklahoma, a decisive moment on issue of terrorism. In 1997, articles in Los Angeles Times written by politicians, not journalists, CIA Director James Wolfley and Assistant Secretary of Defense Joseph Nye, defend against the shadow enemy, the destruction of the federal building in Oklahoma City and the bombing of the World Trade Center in New York shocked Americans. But those tragedies would have been far worse if nuclear, biological, or chemical materials had been involved. So you're creating scenarios.
Yes.
And every time these things happen, new legislation is passed. So
yeah.
Everything is in place, right? Now, this can be pure coincidence that it happened like this. But it could also be planned.
Yeah.
We're not taking a position, right?
No, we're just stating
facts. We're just stating the facts. Correct. And 1997, Defense Minister William Cohen warns of future chemical and biological warfare at press conference and demonstrates anthrax threat on The Breakfast Show. So he holds up a little piece of a packet with sugar in it and says this amount will kill this many people.
Yeah, the half of Washington or something.
Yes,
if I can remember
exactly. Correctly. So fear plays a very important part.
It's also important if you maybe go back to the video of that Austin Fitz lady. She mentioned fear.
Yes.
So it just fits in with what she was saying.
Absolutely. In 1998, Homeland Security Biodefense Program Director Robert Cadillac contributes Chapter 9 called 21st Century Germ Warfare in a Pentagon internal strategy paper called Battlefield of the Future, 21st Century Warfare Issues. So now there's an invisible enemy, yeah. Right?
And now they're going over also to germ warfare and
correct
health.
All right. In 1998, the Center for Civilian Biodefense is founded, and today it's called the Center for Health Security at the St. Johns Hopkins University, funded by the Sloan Foundation. So it's interesting that all these foundations are ultra, ultra rich foundations.
What's also interesting is that's in 1998.
Yes.
And today, 2021, we still hear these names.
Yes. So they started from 1999 to 2005 with Bioterror Simulation Acts. In 1999, they started with their simulation games. First National Symposium on Medical and Public Health Response to Bioterrorism, sponsored by John Hopkins Center for Civilian Biodefense. And for the first time, the Department of Health and Human Services is part of the national security apparatus of the United States. So now they're beginning to coordinate all of these groups. Then in the 1999 as well, they had the Project Bacchus. Interesting names that they choose, right? Launched in Nevada, covert investigation by the Defense Threat Reduction Agency, U.S. Defense Department, to determine whether it is possible to construct a bioweapon production facility with off-the-shelf equipment. See, people said it takes a very specialized laboratory to produce some of these toxins, like anthrax, for example. Yeah. And so they created a laboratory to see whether they could produce it from off-the-shelf products. Mm. Well, you could look at that both ways.
It's also important, if I'm under correction, but if I remember correctly, it was done in secret.
Yes, absolutely. It was done in secret. But having been done, and after a lot of experimentation showing that it is possible that you can then say, but bioterrorists got hold of it and did it by using off-the-shelf material. So in 2000, there was a second symposium by the name Epidemic Response Scenario, Decision Making in a Time of Plague.
So now they're switching a little bit more. Now it's not just biowarfare with anthrax.
Now it's also natural.
Now it can also be like a plague.
Yes. 2001, George W. Bush and Dick Cheney are elected as president and vice president. So this is a long time ago, long time that this planning has been going on. And in 2001, they had a major bioterror exercise called Dark Winter. And I'm fascinated to see that the current role players are using this terminology, Dark Winter, for the COVID plague.
It will be a very dark winter.
It will be a very dark winter. It could be coincidence. Which was a smallpox exercise, sponsored by Alfred P. Sloan Foundation and Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And it took place at Andrews Air Force Base, whereas the previous two were in conference rooms. So now we're moving to the military and incorporating the military, although they'd already set up laboratories, right, in military facilities. September 2001, we have the attack on the Twin Towers. In October 2001, Tom Daschle and Patrick Leahy, who opposed the Patriot Act, received white powder threat letters and gave up their resistance, and the law was passed. So now they have the legislation in place that gives these special powers to the president.
Yeah.
2001, Global Health Security Initiative founded using anthrax letters as justification. In 2002, the health ministers launched initiatives to improve health security globally. Now they test not only for biowarfare, but also flu pandemics. So now they're bringing the natural things in as well, right? Beginning of international level exercises. That's in 2002 already. Yeah.
Previously, it was only America.
Yes.
Now it's universal.
So it's interesting. America always takes the lead, right? 2003, Operation Global Mercury. This was a command post exercise involving the GHSAG nations, plus the World Health Organization and the European Commission, conducted over a 56-hour period between 8 and 10 September. The exercises aimed to evaluate the communications protocols between and among these members in the face of an outbreak of an infectious disease. So now it is internationally coordinated. And how do you deal with the media? And all of these things came into play. In 2003 already.
Yes.
2005, they had Operation Atlantic Storm. And Madeleine Albright played the President of the United States. I was always interested in Madeleine Albright because she always had the phoenix rising out of the ashes as one of her brooches.
Okay.
Not about smallpox per se, rather the exercise was designed to highlight the numerous complicated global challenges that would arise in the event of any large-scale epidemic of infectious disease, whether caused by a bioterrorist attack or a naturally occurring outbreak. So they had all of these scenarios. Mm. Now these people came together and they role-played.
Yes.
They even had the televisions and the media involved.
Yes.
And they practiced how to get information to the media and how to eliminate all contrary information.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Do we see something like that happening today?
Exactly. Exactly.
Isn't that exactly what
censoring somebody that's talking against something? That
yes.
Getting
now, this could all be pure coincidence. It could be. But it does make one think, doesn't it? Okay, in all these exercises, it was not only about a health crisis, who had the sovereignty, it was also about abolition of fundamental rights. They practiced that.
Yeah.
Mass vaccination, authoritarian politics without parliaments. In 2008, there was a financial crisis. Now, the economy is going to play a major role in this because the global reset has to do with resetting the economy.
Yes.
If you want to reset the economy, you must first destroy the old system. Now, in the United States and of America and many of the Protestant countries in the world, the wealth is in the hands of the people. If you want to reset the economy, you have to shift the wealth to the system.
Yeah.
Isn't that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So let's see where this is going to lead. So you have this massive crisis in 2007, 2008. And you know what, Martin? In that crisis, there was a shift from absolute ownership to partnership.
Yes.
The banks and the governments went into partnership.
Yeah.
To bail out the community, which is basically the definition of fascism.
Correct.
Which is the preferred form of government, according to the Jesuits, of the Roman Catholic system.
Yes.
So it's a form of government where Government and industry go in partnership for the sake of the community to prevent a total collapse. Mm. So it seems like a good thing, but now there's no longer a complete private sector business. Yeah. It is now private government combinations.
And if you link this to who owns the crown, then you know who swings the scepter and everything.
Correct. Now, you know, in 2009, you then have a swine flu epidemic. Hmm. So this sweeps across the world, but you don't close everything down. Now, this is very fortuitous that all of these natural epidemics start hitting the world to prepare the people mentally for the big one that is probably coming. And the big one can always become still bigger, right?
Yeah, I remember the World Health Organization saying to us, this is not necessarily the big one.
Exactly. 2010, scenarios for the future of technology and international development by Rockefeller Foundation, four scenarios of which one was lockstep scenario, where all the nations come together and have the same approach.
Yes.
A world of tighter, top-down government control and more authoritarian leadership with limited innovation and growing citizen pushback. Those are quotes from their documents, right?
Correct.
During the pandemic, national leaders around the world flexed their authority and imposed airtight rules and restrictions from the mandatory wearing of face masks to body temperature checks at the entries of communal spaces like train stations and supermarkets. That was practiced in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Is this being implemented?
100%.
100%. Even after the pandemic faded, this more authoritarian control and oversight of citizens and their activities stuck and even intensified. Now, that was just the exercise.
Mm.
This wasn't the reality.
No.
But the reality has come under COVID-19.
We're starting to see it because even now, recently they asked Fauci, why do they still have to wear their masks after they're inoculated? And now there's quite a lengthy few answers that comes to that. But so that just shows the implementation.
It'll always get worse.
Yeah, everything that like this exercise showed, the implementation of certain rules and stuff is not going to go away even if the thing fades.
Exactly. Then we have the presidency of Donald Trump. And everybody says, a breath of fresh air, or the opposite view, this is the worst thing that ever happened to humanity, right?
Yes, the world.
And he's an anti-establishment man, and he says he doesn't want this world coordination. You must put your nation first and let the money flow to the people. And at the same time, he appoints all of the judiciary, the judges. By the way, the judges are all corporation judges.
Yeah.
So they all fall under the system of the straw man control.
This fictional.
Fictional character.
Yeah.
So the judges are.
Legal fictions.
Legal fictions. Mm. Yes. And they appoint all of these high-ranking Catholic individuals. The system is set in place for a papal agenda. And it is a Hegelian dialogue. I'm speculating now. They will say this is extremely conspiratorial. I'm just adding a little bit to the story. But it fits perfectly. Then you pull the rug out from an enemy, which is called COVID.
Mm.
And immediately, that economy that was with the people is removed from the people. The properties remain, and the people are destitute. 2017, Munich Security Conference. McCain said, I refuse to accept the demise of our world order. So Trump and McCain are at loggerheads.
Yeah.
Bill Gates said, we need to prepare for epidemics the way the military prepares for war. We may not know if that weapon is man-made or a product of nature, but one thing we can be almost certain of, a highly lethal global pandemic will occur in our lifetimes. It's as if they're preparing for it, right?
No, well, all these exercises are definitely preparing.
All right, so whether natural or man-made, that is still the debate with COVID even. Immediately afterwards, the exercises start again in 2017. So May 2017, they have the G20 health ministers met for the first time ever in Berlin, Germany, exercising a pandemic scenario of a mountain-associated respiratory syndrome, which they called the MERS virus. So now all the health ministers of the G20, those are the top economic countries in the world, come together to practice this. Mm-hmm. Is there a preparation? 2017, funding of International Advisory Board on Global Health, Jeremy Farrar, Wellcome Trust, and Christopher Elias of Gates Foundation are members. These are the richest corporations in the world. We're talking about trillions of dollars. May 2018, Operation Clade X. Exercise scenario, high-ranking elitist sects develop virus to reduce world population. So that, that's a scenario for conspiracy theorists to go wild on. They're trying to pin this on Bill Gates and all of these issues. We're not interested in any of that. Just looking at the progression.
Yeah. And Thomas Daschle, if I pronounce that correctly, was also part of that. One of those guys that received the anthrax letter. That's
absolutely. So these people are now all involved. These were high-level government officials. In 2019... on the 17th of September, short circuit in the financial system, which nobody really knew about, had nothing to do with the coronavirus because that effect came only in January 2020. So in 2019, there was almost a total market crash, which was kept very quiet.
Very quiet.
We'll look at it in a moment. 2019, they have an exercise called Event 201. John Hopkins Center for Health Security, in partnership with the World Economic Forum and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, hosted Event 201, a high-level coronavirus pandemic exercise. This is also before the pandemic. And if you look at the role players, Christopher Elias, Gates Foundation, George Gao, Director General, Chinese Center for Disease Control, and all of these important people. So the top level of society in terms of the economic world and the political world were involved.
Involved.
It was like a final practice run. Now, when they practiced that Clade X scenario, they had a trailer, which was an official trailer showing what the exercises were all about. So it would be interesting to have a look at them, right? So let's see what they did.
We are continuing our coverage of a new and deadly infectious disease.
The virus has some genetic elements of the Nipah virus.
The care of these patients requires extraordinary effort.
We cannot and will not voluntarily take patients from other hospitals.
The creation and intentional release of the Clade X virus.
The impact of not doing something has lots of consequences.
We can't retreat from the rest of the world.
Continuity of government here cannot be overestimated.
A federal quarantine of this scale is unprecedented.
The question everywhere, when will there be a vaccine?
We have got to engage the private sector.
They know that we don't have a vaccine yet. They want vaccines to be prioritized.
I would not want to pull those people back.
And we need on the ground to be able to assure protection of our first responders.
This is a non-starter. I'm going to need these people. I got this feeling in a whole lot of other places. More than 40 countries are reporting outbreaks, and many more are suspected of having cases.
Leadership requires doing things that are oftentimes unpopular.
This issue has the amazing capacity to be number 11 on anybody's list of 10 most important items.
We have been unbelievably weakened by this crisis.
What the world will look like when it's done is still very uncertain.
Martin, what does that sound like?
I don't know, 2020.
It sounds like the script for what has happened, right? Now, they're saying it's very uncertain what the world is going to look like. I think they know exactly what the world is going to look like, because there is a mastermind behind it, as we looked at in past one, mm-hmm. that is absolutely brilliant and coordinated. And he has a representative on this earth to whom he gives his power and his seat and great authority. Mm. And he knows exactly where this is leading.
Yes. So it might seem confusion and everything, but like you just said, that will become a marvelous, if I remember yes. that word correctly.
And will your civil liberties be taken away? Will you be forced to accept a moral dictate from the first beast?
Yes.
Will you be deprived of your economic impact? In other words, you won't be able to buy and sell?
Correct.
All of it mm-hmm. is in the Bible.
Yeah.
Is this leading up to something that could create that possibility?
I think so.
Here is another article from the German Economic News. Before Corona, EU developed an action plan for comprehensive vaccination of the population. So for 2 years before the corona pandemic, the EU Commission had drawn up a roadmap for vaccination for public health. So is it something that suddenly came upon the world, or has it been a long time coming?
Long time coming.
Now why? Why now? Mm. So let us just look at this crisis of 2019. Now, this was all in that journalist's lecture already, but we've added a couple of slides and a couple of documents just to see if we can make sense of this. Now, he showed a graph about the balance sheet of the Fed, the Federal Reserve. And other banks are, of course, also involved, but this one in particular was very interesting. And it shows a graph of the balance sheet. Now, this is actually a graph that you have to look at in reverse. The higher it goes, the worse it gets,
yes.
right? So the higher it goes, the worse it gets. So in 2008, 2009, when you had that major crash, there was this blip. And the banks had to be bailed out. So in other words, the Fed had to bail out the banks, which means that the papers and guarantees that they got in return increased this balance sheet.
Yes.
So that was a major blip, and it nearly caused the major crash. So they're trying to bring this thing down, and it went down a little bit after the bailout, but then it kept on rising.
Steadily, yeah.
It just kept on steadily rising. In other words, there was a huge outflow of money and debt increased by trillions and trillions of dollars. And, of course, the guarantees in the Fed increased and increased and increased. Mm-hmm. So this is what we're seeing. It's actually, it looks like a positive trend, but this is very bad news.
This is very bad news, yeah.
So then they had, for a long period, what they called this bubble. And there were attempts to let the air out of the bubble to bring it back down to, you know, manageable levels. And here, after 2018, they started releasing the air out of the bubble. So in 2019, something went terribly wrong and there was a massive increase. And they increased their repo rate from 2% to 10%. And somehow they contained it without the public being aware of it.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Now, if you go and look at the entire history of the Fed balance sheet, then we can bring this into perspective. Here we have a historic view of the Federal Reserve balance sheet, and we'll see this massive increase just leading up to the Great Depression. Then afterwards, there was a decline. Then end of World War II, there was another increase. And then it came down and down and down. And then in 2008, you had this increase.
Yeah.
Now, the next one gives us a little bit more information.
Yeah, it shows now how the 2008 crash compared with the Great Depression.
Yeah, so here's the Great Depression. There were the levels then, and here we are now at these levels in the 2008 scenario. And then it continued to rise.
Yep.
Then there was the bubble.
Yes.
Then they tried to release the air out of the bubble. And then in 2019, we had another spike.
Yeah. So if you compare where we are now.
Compared to the Great Depression.
And 2008. It is
nothing in comparison.
In comparison to what where we are now.
So basically what this graph tells us is that the world's economies are finished. The nations are bankrupt. It cannot be restored. A Great Depression must come.
Mm.
So how do you bring about this restoration? How about
a great reset?
Having a great reset. Would that be a useful way of bringing everything back to square one?
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the Great Reset, as the World Economic Forum said, there will be no more private property.
Yeah.
That will be taken away.
You will own nothing,
you will be
happy.
You will own nothing and you will be happy. So the papal system will be introduced. Now, here's the Federal Reserve balance sheet as a percentage of GDP. And again, we see World War I, the Great Depression, World War II, and here we see where we are now. The world is ready for a great
reset,
a new economic program. Now, it wasn't only the Fed, as we can see over here, that was doing this. The other banks, like the Bank of Japan, for example, they were all doing roughly the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a worldwide phenomenon. This is not a United States phenomenon. Here's another article which says the gold standard and digital dollar, the Great Reset, will create a new monetary system. Now, the monetary system is based on the value of the dollar, and the value of the dollar is based on a straw man.
Yeah.
Right? So the world is preparing for a new Bretton Woods moment. At the end of the current Great Reset will be the creation of a new monetary system. But the crucial question is it possible to establish a gold-covered digital dollar as an anchor currency? Is the pandemic crisis a turning point for international economic policy? Are the old Bretton Woods institutions ready to find a new approach? The Federal Reserve has already started its new average inflation targets, while other central banks have systematically lowered their inflation targets. The central banks have lowered interest rates to zero and expanded the balance sheets by more than $7.5 trillion. It's massive.
It's massive.
This financial support must remain in place at least until the vaccination reaches a critical mass. So now the pandemic is playing a role.
Mm-hmm.
A late financial crisis could return as revenge. In the meantime, debt is accumulating at record levels and there are no plans for how the world should pay for it. Well, a great reset is put everything back to naught. Nobody owns anything and everybody gets a basic income. That's what the Pope is asking for.
Correct.
That's what the Spirit of Prophecy said would be the greatest disaster ever to hit humanity.
Mm.
one of the means to bring about a time of trouble such as never was. Here's the Business Insider. The Pope's visit to the United States could be an ominous sign for the stock market. This is interesting.
Yeah. It was in 2015.
Yes.
So it was just interesting to compare this with these current
events.
Economic events.
Yeah, they had a graph there where they showed that every time there was a papal visit, there was a drop in the stock market. Here was John Paul's visit, and then there was a drop, and there was Benedict's visit, and then there was a drop, and then there was Francis's visit, and then there was a drop. That's just interesting information. Yeah. So, now we're going to talk about inclusive capitalism. The merchants of the world will weep and wail when Babylon falls, right?
Yeah.
Because they are intricately involved in this game. And the merchants of the world, these rich corporations, will own basically everything.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't really own anything. No. The crown owns everything. Yes. And the crown is owned by Rome. So Rome has reached the point again where it was before the wound. Again, it is the Pope of Rome that decides who gets what. And if you don't fall in line with his program, you will not be able to buy or sell. And you have to fall in line with his morality.
Correct. It starts off, and that's how you can look at it from the whole time. Like you mentioned before, it's stepping stones.
Every time
it's introducing something a little bit more, and a little bit more.
Eventually,
where it's heading, the Bible tells us.
So here we have the Coalition for Inclusive Capitalism, and we have a video showing exactly what they intend to do.
È necessario urgente un sistema economico giusto, affidabile e in grado di rispondere alle sfide più radicali che l'umanità e il pianeta si trovano ad affrontare.
We are answering Pope Francis's challenge to create more inclusive economies that spread the benefits of capitalism more equitably and allow individuals to realize their full potential.
Too much wealth has accreted to too few people.
If you make money, what's the point if you're not prepared to share it? If the people who help make that wealth for you can't live with dignity.
It's inclusive capitalism, though, and we have to recognize that starting from where we are to where we need to get to, you know, we need to bring everyone along, and there will be adjustments that come with that.
We do need the private sector's ingenuity, capital, technology, people, everything, their passion to come to the party.
We want to operate in a sustainable way where incentives are aligned across generations, not just across quarters, and the main actors take a long-term perspective.
Aligning our innovation with the UN Sustainable Development Goals and the priorities of inclusive capitalism is both a business and sustainability imperative.
We are stewards of this earth. It's our duty to keep it clean and to keep it decent for future generations.
Look, the fact that different religions need to come together on all matters is just the crying need of the times in our world. Faith cannot be used to pull us apart. Faith is meant to bring us together. And the fact that I'm a Sikh and somebody else is a different religion, to me, doesn't matter.
Our work is indeed about social justice, which is rooted in the gospel, the idea that every person deserves to live in a just society.
We need a new system focused on the well-being of people. It's a big challenge, but if it is done right, the benefits will be immense.
We believe we need more than 1,000 organizations on board, and only with this very purposeful collective action, we will see the systemic change across markets that will make capitalism truly inclusive.
We invite all businesses, large and small, and individuals to join us as stewards for inclusive capitalism by going to our website, agreeing the principles, and making your own commitments to inclusive capitalism. Please join us. Thank you.
Martin, doesn't that sound just too wonderful?
Yeah.
These are the mega rich people representing, let's have a look, how many trillions of dollars. Big business gets its wings as leaders from major U.S. companies partner with Pope Francis. Capitalism met Catholicism on Tuesday at some of the world's biggest business leaders announced a new partnership with Pope Francis. The alliance, known as the Council for Inclusive Capitalism with the Vatican, aims to create a more inclusive, fair, and sustainable economic landscape by taking pledges towards sustainable development goals focused on areas such as climate action, peace and justice, quality, education, gender equality. All the buzzwords are there. Mm-hmm. Everything is there. Now, weren't these people in partnership with Rome long ago in secret?
Yeah.
The Rothschilds, isn't that called Rothschild?
Yeah.
Vatican bankers?
And isn't it also interesting? Doesn't that video remind you of the World Economic Forum Great Reset video that we used to watch?
It's the same scenario.
It's the same players. It's the same, the MasterCard, British Petroleum, all those CEOs. And now what's interesting is now it's not only economic and social, but religion is also brought in.
He said we have to work together. So we have the ecumenical movement working together. We have the financial movements working together. We have the governments working together. And all of this has been achieved through a pandemic.
A pandemic.
So how much money do these inclusive capitalists control? Well, here are the members, and you can see their various logos. 10.5 trillion, 2.1 trillion, 200 million workers, 163 countries.
And this is current?
This is current.
So this will start
increasing.
That one person said they're aiming for a 1,000 plus partners.
Now, not everybody, even within the ranks of Catholicism, is happy with what is happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
And here is Dr. Taylor Marshall, and he has something to say on the issue. He's not too happy, but let's listen to what he has to say.
You've heard of the Great Reset. It's the idea that political leaders and big mega corporations are working together to use the current political, economic, and health crisis to reset planet Earth, an entirely new global system. I've talked about it before in previous videos. We've seen world leaders discussing it. And I announced the other day that I received in the mail this book, Let Us Dream, by Pope Francis. And I only read a few excerpts, but since then I've been able to start reading the book. And in particular, the prologue to the book, to me, is shocking. I cover this stuff all the time on the Taylor Marshall podcast. And I was amazed by how explicit this book is on the principles of the Great Reset. And I'm going to read today, not the entire prologue, but a good bit of the prologue. It's only 7 pages, so it's rather short. There's quite a bit in there, and it reads like a religious version of the reset. That's why I'm calling this video The Catholic Reset. And I've said before, ecumenism is the religious version of globalism. We're starting to see that made explicit in this book by Pope Francis. So I'm going to read those passages and give commentary. Before I do, of course, we are going to pray.
So basically, what the Great Reset is the Catholic vision.
Correct.
Of social justice.
That's it.
Which is the exact opposite of what God intended for humanity, so that humanity can learn lessons of character and not be channeled into one think tank group thinking. Mm. And if you don't agree with it, you get wiped out.
Yeah.
So the new system is going to replace the old system. And the old system must be painted in very dark pictures, right?
Yes.
I found it interesting that the Parliament of World Religions recently called for the removal of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
What has the Parliament of World Religions got to do with this, right? They're saying the trustees of the Parliament of the World Religions call on the Vice President and the Cabinet of the United States to transmit to the President pro tempore of the United States Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives their written declaration that the President is unfit and therefore unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. In accordance with Article 4 of the 25th Amendment of the United States Constitution, Donald J. Trump has forsaken his credibility and demonstrated that he is incapable of discharging the powers and duties of the office of the President of the United States of America. The Parliament of World Religions is a global institution and recognizes the influence that the President of the United States has on the world. Those with the greatest opportunity and power to affect the world have the greatest responsibility to act with unflinching moral integrity. Can you see where morality comes in? The Parliament of World Religions remains committed to a culture of nonviolence and a life of truthfulness as agreed upon in our signature document towards a global ethic. Persons who hold political power must work within the framework of a just order and commit themselves to the most nonviolent, peaceful solutions possible. For the leaders of countries, politicians, and political parties to whom we entrust our freedoms, when they lie in the faces of their people, when they manipulate the truth, and when they are guilty of venality or ruthlessness in domestic or foreign affairs, they forsake their credibility and deserve to lose their offices and their voters. Interesting. So one global ethic, one solution.
Yes.
Based on papal morality.
Yes, and if you don't conform, you get censored, taken off anything that you want to say.
And by a click of the button,
yep,
you can be economically deactivated.
Yes.
Now, let's move on to the present. Again, America, the Jesuit Review, has an article, and it says, Joe Biden has a mandate to heal our wounded and divided nation. First you create a division, and then you create a solution. Mm. The fact that Mr. Biden's faith was a matter of contention mainly amongst Catholics and was not an impediment to his election is itself a victory for the American experiment and owes much to the pioneering efforts of the previous Catholic candidates, Smith and John F. Kennedy. Let's just read the highlighted portion. A clear majority of American voters have given Mr. Biden a mandate to repair the nation's social fabric, to bind up the nation's wounds. Mm. Isn't that interesting? And to bring us together as one nation. It is not a mandate to legislate a radical new order, pack the U.S. Supreme Court, or pursue an extreme pro-abortion agenda. The American people deserve leaders as open-minded and willing to work together as they are. The challenges facing us today, Pope Francis said in his address to the U.S. Congress in 2015, calls for a renewal of the spirit of cooperation, which has accomplished so much good throughout the history of the United States.
Coming from a Jesuit newspaper, stating the terminology of a wounded country or
a wound that has to be healed.
It's just interesting.
Yes. Well, let's read what Crux has to say, a Roman Catholic, very prominent magazine, one of the most authoritative.
Mm-hmm.
Taking the Catholic pulse. If Biden is to heal America, he'll need his church. By all accounts, President-elect Joe Biden is a sincere Catholic. He's spoken openly about his beliefs, how his beliefs have sustained him through his personal pain and loss. Arguably, not since Lincoln's first inauguration in 1861 has an incoming American president taken office facing such a divided nation. If Biden is to govern, he'll need to find a way to begin putting the pieces back together, and drawing on the resources of the Catholic Church may be among his better options. Does this sound like a Roman Catholic ideology coming into the United States of America?
Definitely.
Inevitably, Biden will have to lead the way in this national reconciliation project. His greatest asset in so doing so may turn out to be his church. Having seen him through a personal tragedy, Catholicism may be poised to aid him in his defining public test. The Bible tells us that Protestant America will reach across the gulf and take the hand of Rome, because the second beast will make everyone worship the first beast. Here is Religious News Services. Could Catholic moral theology light the way for a new GOP? They want to change the Republican Party? Well, I think that Pence did a good job.
Mm-hmm.
And after all, he was Jesuit trained, and so were all the others, by the way.
Yes.
For some time now, we've heard talk about an American Catholic moment. As far back as 2012, David Gibson, director of the Center on Religion and Culture at Jesuit Fordham University and a former Religion News Service staffer, highlighted some astonishing facts about Catholics in public life. He's talking about Supreme Court judges, etc. In a matter of days, that same Catholic Speaker of the House will look on as the Catholic former Vice President is inaugurated, the second Catholic president of the United States. Depending on how one is scoring at home, 7 Supreme Court justices are or have been Catholic. Should the party decide to realign around a religious, multi-ethnic working class populism, and it should, the new movement will require an ideological foundation. If 2012 was the year Catholics had come to dominate the highest levels of the U.S. public life, 2021 may be the year when the highest levels of public life finally made space for the fullness of a Catholic vision. That is fulfillment of prophecy. And if people aren't aware of it by now, they never will be.
I agree. If you cannot see, this is now talking about a Protestant party.
Yes.
The Republican Party becoming a Catholic, everything is said that it can just as might as well become a Catholic party.
Absolutely. Here's another article, how Biden can lead the U.S. away from World War fought piecemeal. At the same time, the crisis he inherits presents his administration with a rare opportunity to contribute in substantial ways to a new post-pandemic normal. I hate that terminology. Towards which Pope Francis has been incessantly directing our attention. As Biden launches his administration's approach to international relations and very serious security challenges, he would do well to draw deeply upon the values of Catholic social teaching and to absorb the insights of Pope Francis, starting with Laudato Si on care for our common home, Fratelli Tutti on the proposals of the Vatican COVID-19 Commission. Biden has already indicated his intention to take some action on the global stage that would be consistent with the Catholic social teaching. This is the moment in history when Protestant America reaches across the Gulf. And this could bring about the final events portrayed in the scriptures. U.S. President Joe Biden should listen with rapt attention to the pleading of Pope Francis, who in Fratelli Tutti called for an alternative way of thinking, a global ethic of solidarity and cooperation in the service of a future shaped by interdependence and shared responsibility in the whole human family. No place for individualism. No place for personal choice. One collective movement with Lucifer as the angel of light leading the procession.
Didn't the Pope call individuality a virus?
Absolutely. So the one thing that they want is this Catholic moment. This is the Catholic thing. For the first time in American history, no branch of our federal government will be led by a Protestant. The president will be Catholic. The Supreme Court is Catholic. Everything is Catholic, permeated by Jesuits.
Yes.
But it's all pure coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe that?
Not that, no chance.
There's no chance that I can believe that. Mainline Protestantism once acted as the primary ballast in American public life, helping to steady us amidst the choppy waters that attend life in a democratic republic. The ballast is gone, and the long-term effects on American life can be felt all around. This will become universal.
Yeah.
National Catholic Reporter, Jesuit Father Leo O'Donovan to deliver invocation at Biden inauguration. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
So all these Catholics are inaugurating the president.
Mm-hmm.
The previous one was O'Connor. He was a Knight of Malta, right?
Yeah. Who inaugurated
Trump.
Trump.
Exactly. So all these high officials are giving a picture to the world of who's in control. Here it tells us that Jesuit Father Leo O'Donovan, former president of Georgetown University, if I read that name once more in connection with politics, I don't know whether I will have a cadenza, will deliver the invocation at Biden's presidential inauguration on January 20. O'Donovan confirmed to the NCR that Biden had personally called him and invited him to offer the prayer at the inauguration, which will mark the election of the nation's second Catholic president, and that he had accepted. My brother, has the wound been healed?
Yes.
Is an image of the beast forming?
Yes, definitely.
Are the role players in place to ensure that it will happen?
Yes.
Can the Constitution, in the light of the whole lecture now,
mm-hmm.
stand in the way?
No, because it's legal but not lawful.
Exactly. So they are running on executive orders. Through all of the events that have taken place, all the laws are in place that they can implement through their executive orders exactly what they want. And the legal framework has been set, which is totally legal, but was never lawful from the beginning, because the devil is the master of deceit. And he has duped humanity into believing that this is an exceedingly moral movement, whereas it is a rebellion against the government of God.
And everything is set. The economic, to recap, all these events had to come about to get a great reset.
Yes. And the great reset will be in harmony with the papal social justice agenda.
Previously, you had the great reset and all of this. Now, the inclusive capitalism, exactly what you just said, brings it all together.
So, do we have the moment in history when the prophetic picture that we have been speaking about for years has come to fruition?
Definitely.
Therefore, we need to pray. Amen. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, Tyndall prayed, open the eyes of the King of England. And today I want to pray, open the eyes of the kings of this world, because they are marching into a trap. Open the eyes of the merchants of this world, because they are marching into a trap. Open the eyes of the people in this world so that they can realize that they must separate from the system and come out and be separate so that they will not receive of the plagues. Because this system, according to your word, will be destroyed. Give us wisdom. Help us to make right decisions. Is my prayer in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.